talking about the impact journalists of color have on the news you consume. My guests are Sam Ford, reporter for WJLA-TV, ABC 7 right here in Washington, Nicole Quiroga, general manager of Telemundo TV right here in Washington, and Troy Johnson, WHUR news reporter, part of our team here. The lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before the quick break, we were talking about the formation of the National Association of Black Journalists. Sam, like you said, 44 of you. Please go right ahead.
Right. And at that time, particularly, there weren't as many black journalists nearly as there are today. And there weren't as many black elected officials as there are today. And what happened was there was a conference of black elected officials where they brought people together from all over the country. And they were, you know, mayors, basically mayors. I don't think we had any senators or governors. But I do remember seeing the mayor of Cleveland and the mayor of Gary, Indiana. And anyway, so all of these people were there, and for in a number of various news organizations sent their black reporters to Washington to cover this. As it turns out, in my case, I just happened to be here. I mean, I was working in Minnesota, and I was sent here just basically because somebody wanted to be nice. But nevertheless, I was here when they formed the organization, and I became a part of it. But that was it. And I think, you know, like a lot of organizations had a lot of professions had an organization, and they wanted to have a black journalist organization. And so we formed the organization 41 years ago. We had our first convention in Houston, Texas, which would have been actually 40 years ago from this convention. And then we've had a convention every year. And it used to be just like, you know, maybe 100 or 200 people. And now we're talking about thousands of people. And then I think it was in 85, we joined with the Hispanic journalists. And then it became Unity. And then there was the Asian journalists and the Indian journalists and the gay journalists. And there was a big fight. And now it's the black journalists and the Hispanic journalists. We are meeting together this time, just the two. So anyway.
Great story. Real quick, though, why did you decide to form it? I mean, you said we just got together. I mean, was there a suggestion? Did someone say, hey, let's do this, or what was it?
Yeah, you know, there were. And Maureen Bunyan, who, of course, is the anchor woman at Channel 7, and I've heard her tell the story. She was much more involved in, say, the organization of it. And again, I just happened to be here, so I was here. But nevertheless, there were journalists like Maureen Bunyan. You remember Max Robinson, who was a longtime anchor man at Channel 9. There were newspaper people from Philadelphia, like Chuck Stone, Asel Moore. And basically, when you're talking about the NABJ, you're talking about two cities that organize this, Washington and Philadelphia, put this organization together, and it sort of, you know, grew from there. But people, you know, wanted to have a black journalist organization. And, of course, we have had conventions all over America. And when you go, let's say, to, Kansas City, well, a lot of local people from the Kansas City area or the surrounding states would come. You'll have a bigger contingent of them or wherever you happen to be. And so so that's it. And it's great. You know, you make friends from all over the country, friends that I see that now live in St. Louis, that now live in, you know, New York, that now live – that you've met over the years with the NABJ. And in addition, as you were telling me before we went on the air, you've worked with a number of local organizations, and the NABJ has spun off, you know, various local organizations for the New York Association of Black Journalists or the Minnesota Association or Buffalo Association of Black Journalists. And again, it's good to have kind of a network there. In addition, finally, it's also a place you're talking about a reporter's relevant. Yes. Companies want black journalists. So all the big companies are represented there. CBS, NBC, CNN, Sinclair Broadcasting, that's now the owner of Channel 7, has a big booth there. So this is a place where if you're looking for black journalists or Hispanic journalists, you go there, and there they are, and you can hire them right there. And Channel 7 has hired a number of people from the conventions of NHJ or NABJ.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Gary, calling from Southeast D.C., what's on your mind?
Well, hi, how you guys doing? First of all, I'd like to compliment both of you, Harold, you and Sam. This is Gary Clark with Pep Rally for Peace in the Streets.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm good, man. And I was just wondering, I've always had a concern with the nonprofits and grassroots nonprofits, and I understand the convention and the committee and the organization, Sam, that you guys have and that you put together, but it seems like there's such a great emphasis on the negative things that happen in our inner communities in the city, even with the shootings and everything. And why isn't there more an emphasis on the nonprofits, the organizations that are doing positive things, that are bringing information and resources to the community? Why isn't there so more attention given in those areas as it is in the negative? I've been curious about
that. Well, Gary, I'll have Troy and Nicole try to tackle that. Go ahead, Troy.
Well, Gary brings a good point across, and if it wasn't for organizations like NABJ or NAHJ, you would not know about some of these local groups that are doing some really important things in our community. And Harold ran down his list of places that he's been with NABJ.
I was some of them, right?
Just a few. I was a chapter president in Baltimore and also on the national board of NABJ this past term. And I know that chapters around the country work with small groups that are trying to get their message out there, trying to let people know what they're doing to impact the community in a positive way. And fortunately, these chapters are basically doing media training. If you're running an after school program, or if you're running a boxing club or a track, a group for kids, mm-hmm. just to get them off the streets, out of areas where they can be, out of the fray of what's happening in communities. You know, these media trainings help people get their story to who they need to get it to at the news station. Yes, there's a way to navigate a newsroom, even as a group and even as a nonprofit group, and we try to help folks with those kinds of things. Just, you can find examples of that across the country.
Nicole?
I would say the same thing. I mean, I think that, the nonprofits and the small organizations, the community-based organizations are where really that the change in the action is at. And I think,
as reporters, we know that.
And we know that, and we try. And actually, I have conversations almost every day with community-based organizations that, I want to know what they're doing, because this is how things positively change in the community, one person at a time, grassroots, guerrilla, just really in the day-to-day of the people that we're helping. So,
but I will say, you need a hook. I mean, you need something that's going to be different, something that can get the people's attention.
Yeah.
Just because you have an organization doesn't mean that the news is going to go out there and do. We try to keep things interesting, and if you could come up with some hook and get it to the reporter. And sometimes, you can sell a story like that, but, you're kind of competing with the bad news. And let me tell you, the bad news is going to be reported. I mean, that's it. And quite honestly, I'll tell you for myself, I had a story on a house the other day.
I saw it. It was a great story.
Well, it was one of those things where I was on doing bad news, and I happened to run into this man, and he was telling me about his house. So I thought, wow, amazing. And the story is essentially that this man's family has lived in the same house for more than 100 years. He's the third generation, and they, I don't know if you know many. I don't know many people where one family's lived in a house 100 years, but nevertheless, we did the story because there was a hook there. If you're just going to do a story on a house, well, there's got to be something else. So the point is this: if your organization has a story you want to get out there, see if you can find something different about it to sell that to the reporter, and he can sell that to his editor and get it on television or in the paper.
And let us say also, and I've said this, for years, I would get phone calls in the newsroom, and they would say, my daughter is, graduating from, from college, and she's getting 3 degrees all at once. That's great. But you tell us at the end, and it's often the story of how she got there that is more interesting than the end result, which goes back to the piece that Troy was talking about going to organizations and explaining to them what we do, how it's done, and particularly in minority communities, we don't know. we don't know. In majority communities, often you do have stay-at-home moms that are active in the community, and so they're there all day. And if there's an issue in their community, they can come out at 9, they can come out at 10, they can come out at 2, and we can talk to them. But a lot of times in minority communities, folks are working. And it's hard for you to catch up with them. And sometimes they're on the job and they got to come out. So there certainly are struggles that, you know, minority communities have in getting their story out because it's about availability. But certainly, Gary, you know, for your organization and others, something to think about. So thank you for calling. Let me go to Lynn. Lynn calling from Silver Spring. Lynn, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I'm a native Washingtonian by birth. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Sam Ford came to Washington. I believe he was at a different station than WJLA. And they showed a video of his background as a Native American. And as a retired educator, I was enraptured by that video. And I've seen him several times. In fact, one time he interviewed me at the Smithsonian Folk Life Festival. And I kept asking for a copy of that video because a lot of people, including my students and others, are not very familiar with Native Americans and how blacks integrated into Native American life. So if he could have found a little on that, and if that video is still around, and when he plans to reshow it again, please.
I don't know that Channel 7 is going to reshow it again, but I'll tell you where you can see it, because I put it on YouTube. If you go to Samu Ford, SamuFord,
yeah.
It's on there. I put it on there because a lot of people like it. I think it's got a 500,000 hits. I mean, people do like it. It's called Black Slaves, Red Masters. That's what
yeah.
we did. And it is my heritage that our family were slaves of Indians, Native Americans. And one of the interesting things is next weekend I'm going to a conference in Kansas City of freed men, so black descendants of the slaves of Indians. They're having a big conference in Kansas City. And one of my cousins actually organized it, and so I'm going to be going to this conference. But yeah, that's a part of American history a lot of people didn't know. And one Black History Month, I told the people at Channel 7 I thought it was a good story. They said, great, going out to Oklahoma and do it. And we did it. And and people are still talking about it 25 years later.
Exactly, and I remember it. Thank you so much.
Well, Lynn, yes, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I know that we are in Washington, you know, metropolitan city, melting pot or mulligan stew, depending on how you want to, you know, look at it. But and I'll direct this first, you know, at Nicole, but I want everybody to kind of talk about this, because I think the reality is when you talk about fighting stories, fighting for stories and stereotypes and negative images, when you go to smaller markets, like for myself, Kansas City, Buffalo, New York, Columbus, Ohio, Huntsville, Alabama, Tallahassee, Florida, for example, when you are often the only black guy or brown guy in the room, Sam, you've been here, so you missed out on it. You know.
Sometimes I am the only one in the room.
Yeah. You know, how do you, Nicole, address that and deal with some of the, you know, the negative stereotypes that sometimes appear on our televisions and in news stories?
How do I deal with, I guess, the being in the minority mm-hmm. to the 10th degree
right.
in some of the markets? Well, and I have to say this. I know we're on radio, but I will tell you this right now. I mean, I am, you know, of a Bolivian background. But if you can look at me, and I say this to you very, you know, sincerely, I have very light white skin. So I actually have been able to maneuver in some situations.
Go ahead.
And sorry, maneuver in some situations where I can actually walk in a room and people just by sight don't automatically identify me as Latina, mm-hmm. right? And so therefore, back in the day, you know, that gave me an open door. It, you know, I wouldn't be immediately shut out because of somebody's, you know, prejudice or stereotype of me. Now, so when I personally go, but I see my colleagues go into other markets and it's rough. At the end of the day, we still live in a society where there is a lot of stereotype and prejudice that is you know, and I could tell you, oh, this is how we deal with it. Outside of talking, outside of trying to educate, outside of behaving in a way that teaches people out instead of maybe making them on the defense.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we'll have my other reporters here chime in on that question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Nikki from Suitland, we'll also talk to you.
This is Ricky.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the impact journalists of color have on news you consume. Before the break, we were talking about being the only black guy in the room sometimes when you're in a newsroom and what your responsibility perhaps may be in making sure that, you know, stereotypes are avoided, prejudice in stories or in incorrect cultural information is there. Sam.
Oh, okay. Well, here's one that got me recently, okay? We have this service on Channel 7. I don't know exactly where this thing comes from, but I'm sitting there looking, and they have a picture of President Obama kissing some woman. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the news, and this is a serious story. Now, I've never seen President Obama kissing any woman except Michelle. Mm-hmm. And so I said, wait a minute, what is this? And I drew it to the attention of the news director, and he said, well, where does it come from? Then he contacted the IT director. The point is, within an hour, they found out who did this, and they got it off our website. Okay? Now, it had been on there, I guess, for days, and nobody had said anything about it, except it popped up to me, but it was a sneaky website. It wasn't something where you could just go and watch it. It would pop up in some kind of rotation, and I'm not sure what it was, but they got to the bottom of it. Now, why? Is it because I'm a black journalist? Yeah, I mean, to insult a black journalist, to insult the president, to suggest, when there's nobody really suggesting it, to suggest that he's doing something that he's not doing, it's an insult. And certainly I didn't think Channel 7 wanted that on its website, and they didn't. And once they found out about it, it took some work to get to the bottom of it, but they got rid of it.
So, what do you think about that, Troy, when you're talking about dealing with stereotypes and making sure that the images of the minorities that may be in a story mm-hmm. are accurate.
I think it's essential to what we do. And, you know, Sam alluded to the fact that, you know, at those meetings, whether it's a called meeting, a formal meeting, or whether you're just in the newsroom with people and you hear people saying things that don't add up correctly, or, you know, it's funny to be in the room when there's a reference to rap music, and you know they're going to be looking at you because they assume that you know.
Not me. They don't even look in my way.
but I mean, you know, sometimes that's a good thing. But then on the other hand, why don't you know these things? Mm-hmm. Why don't you know who Kanye West is or mm-hmm. whoever? You should know. Because it's ingrained into our culture. It's what our viewers and listeners, when they're not watching our newscast or listening to our newscast, it's what they're going to be doing. They're going to be listening to Kanye or whoever. So I think it's critical to have those conversations. And you know, I kind of look over the frame of my glasses at folks.
I've seen that.
At colleagues, yeah. Like, yeah. Are you don't know this? How do you not know this? You know, you're supposed to know these things. So I like to do a little chastising. Now, I don't run through the newsroom like, hey, what the hell's going on here? But I do feel like that's a teachable moment. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to educate.
Let me go to Nikki calling from Suitland. Nikki, mm-hmm. thanks for hanging in there. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call, Harold, and hi, guest, and Samport. I just wanted you guys to speak to the ability of the reporter to speak the truth in light of some of the negative the police brutality and against unarmed African American males, and how free you are to report that truth, and as opposed to if you were in working for a mainstream employer, as opposed to a company that's
I got you, Nikki. Nicole,
like the CEO may be African-American descent.
Well, let me see if Nicole can chime in on that, and then everyone else can as well. Go ahead, Nicole.
So I think what the question is how do you really, you know, some organizations or media organizations might push you, sway you, and direct you specifically to report a particular angle. And I think some of us know, you know, that actually is very live and well today. So I think what happens there is the responsibility of each reporter. You choose who you work for. And you're going to be in some organization that's going to tell you, you know what, this is exactly the angle. We're going to go far right with this. We're going to look at this angle. We're going to say this way. We're going to paint this picture. And at that very moment, you decide as a reporter, this is what I want to do or it's not. Because I'll tell you that if you don't follow the directive of the organization, if you're working for one of them, you're going to be, quote, on the street. Anyway, so you make your choice.
And I don't know, you know, we were saying, are you objective? Objective, we're not. What we try to be is fair. And that is to present both sides. That is basic journalism, and that is what we try to do. Sometimes I mix it up. You're asking about the young person and what the police have to say. I mean, I actually did a story a few weeks ago where I had a white woman defending the interests of a black mother. She says, well, you know, I would be worried about my son going out. And then I had a black cop defending the interests of police. I mean, because sometimes it's not exactly, it is racial, but sometimes it's not racial because some black cops think the same way that white cops do. And some white mothers are as concerned about the situation for black people as black mothers are. So those are things that you asked. The point is, you want to get every viewpoint in the story, not that you're, let's say, taking a side, but if somebody's anti-police, I'll put them on TV. But you got to balance it out with somebody who with the police, with their point of view as well. So I don't think there's any reason any legitimate viewpoint cannot be presented in the course of a story.
Nikki, let me share a real quick story with you. Back when I was in Huntsville, Alabama, and I was the first black male anchor in that entire city. They had never had one in that city before. And I will tell you, the first day I was on the air, I got some really interesting phone messages, but that's another story. There was one of our anchors was a white guy, and he had stumbled across a story in a town called Arab, Alabama. And that's how they pronounced it, Arab, A-R-A-B, where a black family was being harassed by the Ku Klux Klan. And he covered that story. When he wanted to put the story together, the news director shut it down because of the very nature of the story, racial tension, racial strife, and, you know, the whole stereotype of that kind of thing in Alabama. This is where journalists need to be brave. And he was. The news director the following week went on vacation and the stories aired. He was going to be fired, but he won an Emmy for the three-part story. This was a white guy doing a very fair story about, you know, racial violence, cross burnings, all of that. And so I think that, yes, you know, that was during the 1990s. It's 2016, and these things are still happening. And so, yes, I do believe that sometimes reporters have to be brave. They have to be strong. They have to they have to be full of integrity. And you know, and to this day, I certainly salute him. And so, yeah, and here at WHUR, yeah, we do believe, even though this is, you know, an African-American centered broadcast, you know, we do try to do as best as we can in dealing with the truth as it is happening. So thank you so much, Nikki. I appreciate it. I have a few moments left. Where do you think, and I'll start with Troy, you know, where will our place be, Troy, as more journalists of color, you know, become involved in, you know, in the business? And then we've got bloggers, and then we have all these other kinds of folks. It, you know, it ain't the way it used to be.
No. There's so many challenges. I'm just a person who does the job on a daily basis. I'm not the person in the office, you know, making the decisions from a financial standpoint, but it's kind of twofold in my mind. It would be great if there wasn't a need for an NAHJ or NABJ because people understood that all perspectives were heard then we could all just go home and do our job on a daily basis. That's not going to happen. And what complicates it again is just the business of news. Is it worth doing? And that makes our points of view when organizations decide they do want to focus on Hispanic issues, they do want to focus on Black issues, or whoever, whatever the subgroup is, then you get, well, it's not profitable. So there it's a battle. You know, I think what we've learned in these organizations, thanks to Sam's vision and the others, when you think about what's happening in ABJ now, is young people who are the next generation of journalists are now getting it's kind of making sure that they have the skill set to be able to be flexible, to be able to deal with all of these things that maybe we won't have to deal with in the next 5 and 10 years. Hopefully that will still be around to be able to make a contribution, but it's going to be interesting.
Nicole, what do you think?
I think that, you know, one thing that needs to happen before any other change happens is that children need to be educated how to consume media and what that means. Did you know that in some universities they're actually opening departments for media psychology? And it doesn't mean anything other than what that stress level that kids are growing up with because of the fragmentation of media, because all the news is coming your way, and because, quite frankly, you can't tell what's real, what's not, what's entertainment, what's news. So in addition, I'll agree with the piece of the business, right? This is stopping us from necessarily putting out the news that we should. We need to get on it and make sure that our kids understand the importance of media literacy, if you will. Mm.
Especially if it's more than 140 characters. Sam, I'll let you have the last
exactly.
word.
Well, at the NABJ and the NAHJ convention, I just want to say the first day I've been there, I've had a great time. Great conversations with a young Hispanic journalist from Rockford, Illinois, talking about the MMJ, and that means that I don't, that doesn't mean anything to radio people, but it basically means you shoot and you do the story, the same thing. But talking about that, the enthusiasm she had, talking to young Black journalists. Actually, I dropped by Howard University, had a reception this evening, and I dropped by, and lots of young people from Howard University, and some of them had been interns at Channel 7. Now they're out as successful people in the world back here for the NABJ. So that is a wonderful part, because every year the journalists at the NABJ get younger and younger.
That's right. And you stay the same. Sam Ford, Nicole Quiroga, and Troy Johnson, thank you all so much. I appreciate you coming in. And, of course, enjoy the convention this week. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, August 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter